Okay. Well, I'm gonna start it. I'm gonna start this off and try to just rip it out.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Rip us up.
No jokes. No.
No.
Happy.
No, there must be jokes.
No silly funny business.
Only straight analytical business. Nope. Analysis.
Just business. Straight. Strict. Straight up.
Make those shareholders happy.
I've got a paddle, and I'm dressed in black, and I'm ready to be serious.
Yes, please.
We're ready to learn. Are you ready
to learn? No wonder Victoria's on top.
Here we go. Check it out. It is We Happen to Be Trans, a pop culture podcast. It was like I was shifting gears. I'm ready for the race.
Yeah.
The raceway.
Witness me.
The Indy 500.
Oh, that type of race.
And,
okay.
Not one. 500 billion, million trillion, and one. And we're shifting into gear. We're shifting into seventh gear and first place. We're on our way to first place. This podcast is the number one podcast of a generation amongst women and children aged 20 to 78.
What happens at 79 that they no longer like our podcast? Ooh.
Especially children 79 or older. They don't. They really don't like it.
Wow.
Now, we're here for Minisode, and we're doing another section of Revisited. It is Minisode Revisited. It's too big to fit in our big episode, and it's too small for a mini. Wait.
Non-Minisode. A regular episode.
It's too big. Why are we doing it on this one?
Because me and Jen talked too much last time.
Because I talked for 5 minutes and then you guys just went off on Mario Maker for like
I'm surrounded
35.
By a bunch of blabbermouths, which means that we need to now break our episodes
right.
up into two pieces.
Yes, it is us.
I bet you can't just have one and it's too big. It's jumbo size, a jumbo size podcast. Remember jumbo size candy bars?
Yeah.
And this is why we need to have this.
But that's exactly why we need to put this into a mini-sode. So hit it, Victoria.
Okay, I'm ready. Jumbo size candy bars, Jumbo Jack. Jumbo. Dumbo's mom's name, probably. I don't know. Dumbo's
this
mom
better
have a
be
name?
The best segue of all time.
I don't think
Jumbo.
So.
Speaking of Jumbo. Guess what else can't be fit in just one? Final Fantasy VII Remake, which is what we're talking about today. And by we, I mean me. And by you, I mean you're listening to it. So welcome aboard the Victoria train of Final Fantasy VII, part 1 of 3. Okay, do you do 3 like this? Or 3 like this?
Like, what even is that?
Okay, check this out. Hey, Jen. Jen.
No.
Ask what? Me how many people are podcasting on this episode.
How many people are podcasting on this episode?
Oh, fuck. Do it again. Do it again.
How many people are podcasting on this episode?
How do we get this across as a joke through audio alone? I don't know.
So apparently her name is Mrs. Jumbo. Not Jumbo. Mrs. Jumbo.
Is her name actually Jumbo?
Her name? No. It's Mrs. Jumbo.
So Jumbo's their last name?
His name
yes.
is Dumbo Jumbo?
I'm not 100% certain. It's the elephant matriarch / Mrs. Jumbo.
I don't know that his large ears were the real problem. That's all I'm saying. Dumbo had a few reasons to be a little nervous, to be hanging around the bullies at school near the lockers. That's all I'm saying.
Well, my thing is, I'm looking at IMDb, right? Which is fairly accurate in most cases. Every single fucking person in this movie is marked as uncredited. Yes.
Yeah. Like, what?
Seriously. The Ringmaster, voice, uncredited. Timothy Q. Mouse,
Did
voice,
they just
uncredited.
Just not want to be seen in that movie because it
I bet
wasn't
Walt
very
Disney's
good.
Just an asshole.
No, I'm pretty sure Walt's just an asshole who wanted more money and didn't pay them. Because either they were breaking union contracts to go work for him, or he didn't want to pay them union rates. One of the two.
Okay.
Wow, that's a dick move.
Dick move. May he rest in peace. Dick move, though. Now, let's move on to another classic, revisited, Final Fantasy VII. So, I broke it down. Last time I talked about this topic, last time I played it, it was a demo. And I played this demo. I had raving reviews about the demo. Fighting system's great. Graphics are obviously great. Voice acting is great. Soundtrack, great. No problems. I beat the game. And so, the original Final Fantasy VII was about 70 to 80 hours long. This game was about 60 to 70 hours long in and of itself. And it's only a third of the original. What they do in the original game, you start off in a city called Midgar, which is very, it's very futuristic for a fantasy setting. It's a land. Look, this could be spoilers for some people. The game came out in 1997.
It's kind of cyberpunkish.
Yes, it is. Well,
exciting
cyber.
It.
I guess Steam. I mean, cyber Steam.
It's like a cross between Steam and cyber. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But. It's a basically this company called, so there are a bunch of towns in this world, but you don't know that when you start out. You just live in one city and you can't really see outside because a lot of it is covered up. And so this corporation named Shinra owns and built and designed this city, and it runs off of something called, I used to say Mako Energy, they say in the game Mako Energy. But it's this energy that they siphon from reactors. They siphon this energy from the planet itself. So it's very much analogous to, you know, anti-warming, just good resource management. You know, love the planet, love the Earth, which we all down for. I don't think any of us are like, fuck yeah, let's pillage the planet and use up all the resources. Fuck the future. I don't know. Like, I don't think any of us are on that bandwagon. But this corporation is... not great, but a lot of the citizens, so the city of Midgar is divided into 8 sections, with each has a reactor there, and there are 2 levels to it. There's a top layer, then there's the ground layer underneath the top plate. It is a very clear analogy to the have and the have-nots. Everything under the plate is called the slums. So every reactor, it's like, okay, here's reactor 1, the plate, reactor 1, slums, reactor 2 plate, you know, and it goes so on and so forth. It's a circular city. It looks like they actually call it the upper plate. It looks like a giant pizza in the sky, but it blocks out the sun for the people underground, and they get all the trash and garbage, like shit all over them. And so you are a mercenary for hire. You used to work for Shinra. Cloud Strife is the main character's name. He used to work for Shinra. He is no longer working for them. And is a soldier for hire, and he comes together with his childhood friend Tifa, who is a part of a anti-establishment organization. They're pro-Earth organization that is looking to take down Shinra and the pillaging of the planet.
So, militant Greenpeace.
Basically, where you're basically going to different sections and taking the reactors offline. You want to stop the reactors. And as the story goes on, you uncover much more than you signed up for. You become a part of it. You find out more and more that Shinra is vastly more evil than anyone would believe. But a lot of the citizens, even in the underground, look at Shinra as like, oh, they're looking out for us. Like, our overlords. Some people hate them. But you're definitely viewed as like a Greenpeace, like terrorist type group. Like a... You're breaking the law.
You're an eco-terrorist.
Eco-terrorist, thank you. Cloud is originally just in it for the money. He's like, just pay me. That's all I'm here for. But he does, as you do, start to, you know, get a heart for these people. You meet them, you know, the people that you're working with. You start to believe in the cause. You start to learn more about the cities outside of Midgar, that there is a world out there, and it's not quite as great as it's made out to be in Midgar. Even the workers and employees, they start uncovering that some of them get Mako poisoning and suffer almost like radiation type poisoning, I'm sure. It's rampant with analogies that I think we're all pretty behind. I don't know that we're behind eco-terrorism, but for the causes of you know, good things and healthy people and not evil corporations doing evil, shitty things. I can't go any more into it than that. The only other thing that I'll say is, so most people know of Cloud and they know of Sephiroth, who's the main villain of the game. Sephiroth was another main... Shinra owns the police in this town. They're Shinra soldiers, and so there's the upper class, the like warriors that they train who like lead the troops and stuff. Cloud was one of those. Sephiroth was one of those. And as you go on, you find that there's different divisions within Shinra. There's a division of kind of biochemistry, and there's like a scientist who's like trying to see what they can use this Mako, this planet resources, and they're using it for war, using it for experimentation, manipulation, cloning, all kinds of shit. And they're just not great. That's the story of Final Fantasy VII up through the end of this section. If I give any more away, it's spoilers. Okay, let me get my thoughts on the game itself overall.
I remember you being very excited about this. So did it live up to your expectations as a remake?
It mostly did. So the thing is, there are a few sections. There's a lot of side quests. So what's wonderful is, in the original game, you spend 10 hours in Midgar, and then you go into the main world. And you kind of, it's like broken up into two different, so you spend most of the time out of Midgar. This game, you spend 70 hours in Midgar, and they really open up the world itself. You just learn so much more about what life is like there. You get such a bigger heart for like the people in the slums and the underground. You even learn to care about some of the people, like the haves, you know, not just the have-nots. And you really start to get a feel for like a lot of compassion, and you learn that Shinra, there are some good people in Shinra. They're not all pieces of shit. So you're doing side quests for different people in the city. You're building up your mercenary credit. You're trying to get more money. People in the town start to love you and respect you. These are optional side quests, though, a lot of them are. You don't have to do them, but if you do them more, you actually get to uncover certain sections of dialogue and story beats. And the demo is the first reactor that you try and blow up. The second reactor that you get to, you actually get separated from your team. You fall from the top plate to the slums in a different section, and you land in a flower bed that is run by this florist named Aerith, who is like the big freaking... There's a scene in the game that is like the one of the most top 10.
It's been spoiled everywhere.
Most memorable, yeah. So I'm just going to say, okay, if you've never played Final Fantasy VII, the original, and you don't want to hear, why the fuck are you listening to this episode? I don't know, but I hope you're enjoying it so far. Aerith dies. She gets killed in the original Final Fantasy VII. She is not killed as of yet in this, because in the original, she dies later on. There's three discs in the original on PlayStation 1. She dies in like the end of disc 2 or disc 3. This was just Midgar, so she is alive through the end. So you meet her. You can have a romance with her. You could have a romance with Tifa. It's kind of like depends on how you play. The things that you do can affect. There's a section where one of the slums sections that you go to is called Wall Market. It's like the Vegas, like debaucherous, like gambling. There's like showgirls. There's like sex work.
Sounds like a blast.
Like
I'm down.
It's freaking, it's cool. But the dude who runs that slum is a real piece of shit. He will get female applicants to like have as his like mate, and then they are not seen or really heard from if something goes wrong. And so basically what happens is your friend Tifa tries to get information from this guy by applying, but then you find out that she's probably going to be killed or something terrible, maybe even, you know, taken advantage of sexually or something. And so there's a whole section where you're with Aerith, and she says, well, Cloud, like, if there's three people that he's going to pick from, Tifa's one of them, we could be the other two. And Cloud's like, what do you mean, we? And so this is the section in which that is the very famous for the LGBT community, where where Cloud dresses up as a girl. And it is so awesome for every single trans person that was young playing it, like myself. And
even though you wind up on a date with Barrett later, if you get all the nice clothes, I always went for all the nicest clothes.
Oh, yeah. So I got the second to nicest clothes. You can get nicer or less nice clothes. Mm-hmm. So in the original, you would dress up and you'd get like this, you know, these kind of panties or like...
That's the like capitalist nightmare where we are only valued by the clothes that we can afford. Oh, gosh. Dystopian. Anyways, sorry, continue.
It's to please this slumlord that's an asshole.
Yeah.
So the person judging is a piece of shit. And that's made very, very clear. But in the original, it was like, oh, you could get these panties or you could get like bikini briefs, or which is worse. Or you could get like this kind of perfume or this kind of perfume. You could get like a ratty dress or like a princess dress.
You have to go to the drag queens, who are all muscle builders, to get the really nice dress. Or was it the nice wig? One of the two.
So there's a ratty wig. Yeah. So there are very either flamboyant or I don't know if they're gender queer, gender nonconforming, or maybe they just like wear makeup. I don't know exactly what, but there's a whole gym full of dudes that they're ripped, but they are very like what more would be traditionally seen as femme, even though those barriers, whatever.
Gender nonconforming men.
Yeah.
In the original, they were stereotypical view of Japanese video games of gay men. I mean, that's in the original, that's what they were.
And in this one, it's a bit more broad and they don't play it up as much in a tasteless way. I felt like this one was much more tasteful in its presentation. But the world's come a long way in a lot of ways. Maybe I'm wrong. Somebody can send in corrections if you feel like it's different. So what happens is you do the side quests in this. You go to get picked. When you go to it's called the Honeybee, the sex worker place. They have cabaret shows. They have different rooms that you can go in and get your Mac on. You don't go get your Mac on, but people are getting their Mac on. You can look through like keyholes and stuff.
Oh my.
Such a weird game. You don't see anything, but you hear it. Anyway, in this one, there is actually a whole thing where the guy who runs the Honeybee takes you out on stage and does an entire cabaret dance number, and you play like a DDR type button press at the right time. And you dance with him, and he's very into you.
And so wait, it's like the FF9 fight sequence at the very beginning of the game to earn more money? Because you got to hit the buttons at the right time to make the fans cheer, to get them to throw more money at you on this stage performance?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then there's a whole reveal, and God, the dude who runs it has such a freaking good quote. You know what? I'm going to have to look it up, and maybe I'll just add it to the episode.
Wow, cool quote, Victoria. It's something,
no, I know, it's awesome. Yeah. I don't have time to look it up because you're pressed for time. Anyway, it's something about like gender should be something that's expressed without shame, like no matter what it looks like. Something like that. That's like, it's really great. And it made me feel great about existing and this game's view of anyone's expression of their gender. And it was something that I was initially nervous about just because the original handled it in a different way. This one was much better, much, much cooler. Anyway, you dress up like a girl. It's freaking cool. Hip, hip, hooray. Save the day. The game goes on. But it's a very famous scene in video games, especially for the LGBT. And that whole section is a lot longer. Everything is longer. The thing is that you don't have to do the side quest, but I wanted to. There were times where it felt a little like samey or... Like you'd go through certain like areas where it's like, okay, like it's kind of like you're going through a lot of tunnels. It looks open, but you can only go in a narrow space. So you can't move anywhere, but you can see a lot of places. And it's kind of like hallways, you know, and it starts to kind of feel a little like it looks incredible, but it feels a little boxed in sometimes and a little redundant or... I was like, okay, I'm ready to move on or whatever. But most of the time I was pretty engaged. So I would give the design and like pacing a pretty good rating. I would say it was good, but it wasn't excellent. But what it led to me understanding the world more of Midgar, the city of Midgar is huge because that city is a whole city that's thriving. It's huge. It's a big city and there's a lot to learn and a lot of good stories to be told and a lot of characters. It made me fall in love with the characters way more. There are characters that die, like that you're with that died in the first one, not Aerith, but other characters that in this one you get to know them so much better. And I pretty much cried when they died.
That'd be great.
In the original, it was like, I barely knew them. That's sad. Moving on.
Everybody this was time, upset because it's the constant references to Biggs and Wedge, but they've been referenced in like five different games by that point.
Okay, so the game is hard as shit. I do need to preface that. I played it on normal. It's the hardest role-playing game I've played in my life. I was constantly having to fight for my life and survival. Most RPGs, I don't know if you agree, but they're pretty fucking easy. It's not hard to min-max. Losing battles doesn't happen very often in JRPGs when it's turn-based battles. No. I'm talking about turn-based JRPGs, which is what the original was. This was like, the stakes were always high. I was like on the edge of my seat for most battles, especially boss battles. I died a number of times. It was thrilling. You can play it on easier modes if you don't want that challenge, but I thought the challenge was fucking cool. And I got really good at the fighting and it felt great, especially when you have summons on the field and it's all real time. And you really get in the groove of it, it just feels exhilarating. It's night and day. I never want to play the original Final Fantasy VII ever again. Just with that alone. And then the last thing that I want to say is, so this is another spoiler town. Skip this part or just end the episode of this part. The end of the game. So they really do a good job of taking your expectations and tweaking them in a way where you're like, where the fuck is part two and part three going to go? I don't know that this is going to be the exact same game.
Mm.
So it got me thinking two things. There's a lot of hinting about a lesbian relationship between Tifa and Aerith.
Ooh.
And not very much about there being a relationship between Cloud and either of them. There's a lot of just reaching out to each other, like being excited about each other, like just... like being concerned for each other. They're concerned for Cloud too, but it's like a friend concern. Mm-hmm. It is such a, like, there's a total crushy vibe going on where I'm like, are they about to kiss? And if I'm wrong on that and they don't go that way, I'll be actually more shocked than if they do at this point.
I mean, it sounds like from combat, they learned their lessons from 12, 13, and 15 and made it harder. It sounds like story-wise, they took some of the beats and notes from the sequel and the prequel, from Dirge of Cerberus and A Crisis Core, the sequel and the prequel, and expanded on the universe and took those expanded pieces and built even more into the world. And then they've tweaked the story a little bit in just the ways to make you unexpected. And I like that. I like the sound of this. I'm not buying a PS4. It's too expensive.
Yeah, that's fair. Right? That's fair. Maybe it'll come to PC at some point.
If it comes to PC like 15 did, that'd be great.
So here's the deal. You do there's a whole motorcycle chase out of Shinra headquarters. You're taking down Shinra. Sephiroth starts getting involved. You're like, holy shit. Just like the original with the Midgar section. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go out into the world and then they're going to show the world just like it does in the original. 10 hours in, you get out, you see the world. I'm out of Midgar. Wow. Instead of that, they do something that I love and hate at the same time, which is they start introducing that the world is something is like there's fuckery with the world. Like something is off about the timeline almost. Like they start introducing a timeline type thing at the end of this disc where these like almost like these entities start getting involved on the highway.
Shit.
And you have to start fighting the representations of fate and time, and basically you are challenging like the fabric of the universe in a form that starts intervening, and it's intervening a little bit before that, but then it kind of comes up and it's like it's throughout the game it's weaving this kind of thing. You're like, what the fuck is that? And what it's leading up to, and this is what I got from the disc one ending, and they really hit it home. You fight fate. And basically what they introduce is, hey, guess what? This game and this timeline is completely open to be whatever the fuck we want it to be. Things are not going to go. They haven't been going the exact same way, and things won't be going the same way. You see, I don't know if you're familiar with Zack, Jen?
Yep. The only thing I haven't done is I haven't played Dirge, and I haven't played the Genesis game.
Zack might be alive. You may have changed... history. He died.
He died after being merged, after saving Cloud, after they were merged. Yeah.
You have changed history and fate because you were pushing against. It's almost like saying like the future is like it's not determined by fate. It's what you make it. If you've ever seen a multiple Yep. Do you gotta go, Kaylee? I don't want to keep you if you need to.
I can stick around. It's not super pressing, but I had plans.
If you need to step out, that's okay. What, yeah. Like,
there's two things I want to say quickly though. That I thought was really cool. Earlier in the episode, you talked about having how there are kind of two stages, the haves and the have-nots, and how there's a division vertically, which is such an interesting trope that I think is pretty unique to cyberpunk, and really cool how all the big corporate people who are living life large are at the top, very... Like, it's not just, like, on the graph of income, they're at the top, but they're actually physically
yeah.
over top of everything, while everyone else is stuck in the, like, ruined buildings down below that they've built on top of. And so I think that's a really cool, like, trope and just interesting thing to see kind of used in this story that sounds like it takes a lot of inspiration from cyberpunk. And it also sounds like an amazing way to write a remake that really challenges things of bringing in the concept of fate and then having the battle kind of be against that and opening up the next games to do something different. That's a really fascinating and engaging way to make sure that people aren't expecting the same thing, but also it creates a whole new conflict that you can have where now people who died, you can, like, be fighting to keep them alive or to change things that you remember from the last game. And I think that's a genius way to go about writing a remake.
It's basically like if you were to go through a remake, if you've ever played a remake of something and you're like, wow, that's different than the original. Oh, cool. I like that direction that the developers or the writers took it. It's different a little bit, but not too much.
Yeah.
It's like they did that and then they went meta with it. And then they're like, as you're going and you're like, this is different. The game then comes in at the end of this disc and says, hey, those different things that have been happening, you're fucking up the timeline. You're fucking up the universe. It's not supposed to be this way. It was supposed to be like in the original game that you played. And now because you fucked with it, you've got to face off against the entity of like fate and time and shit. And then you defeat it. And now they're basically saying, okay, write your story. You like Cloud and all of you didn't want to do what fate dictated. Now something different's gonna fucking happen. Way different. And the world is completely open in a way that was way beyond what you thought. You fight Sephiroth at the very end of this disc and defeat him. I don't know what the fuck is going on. Jen, did you hear what I just said?
Yeah, I did. I was trying to pull some information because I've got some details that are just
okay, 2 seconds and then we'll let Kaylee go. Just two real quick things.
Yeah.
My hope is that Aerith and Tifa get together in the coming discs. My other hope is, and this is a big fucking bombshell, but I fucking hope this happens so bad. I hope that in the scene where Sephiroth puts his sword through Aerith, that instead he ends up putting his sword through Cloud.
Ooh.
That would be huge.
I would absolutely love to see a twist on that where maybe he even puts his sword or he goes to put his sword through and Cloud stops him or you know, sacrifices himself instead or just some way that they subvert all expectations about what's going to happen. Because the biggest blow to all video game sorrow and sadness was Aerith being killed. The tears of 1,000 nerds around the universe friggin' cried that day. What could you possibly do to be big now? You kill your main character instead of the character you expect to die. And then you have that love relationship between Aerith and Tifa. That's the most unexpected thing that they could possibly do. And I would absolutely love it because it'd be a different game. If you want to play the original Final Fantasy VII, go play that fucking game. If you want that story, go play that game. I'm down for this fucking game.
That sounds amazing. One more question then.
I don't know if they will, but that's what I want. Anyway, go ahead.
That sounds so freaking cool. Then for someone like me who hasn't played the original, I'm sure I could enjoy a lot of the remake, but is there a lot of like inside knowledge you need in order to get full enjoyment out of it? Or is sort of like this idea, like hinting that Zack's alive and that, is that explained enough that like I'd get it, or I guess it just wouldn't be as interesting to me.
You would get a full experience and full satisfaction, I believe. Okay. But you would get extra satisfaction if you played the original. Bonus satisfaction.
Yeah. Do you think it's worth going back and, or like watching someone play through the original in order to understand the story or some sort of... Yeah?
Okay. I would say play this one first and see if it's hooking you.
Yeah.
And if you like it enough at the end of that to go back and watch a playthrough of the original, then do it that way.
Okay.
That's awesome. That's my number one recommendation.
Fantastic. Okay. That sounds
great. I don't
want
to keep you anymore. We happen to be trans, a pop culture podcast, a serious to the point podcast. We didn't even go anywhere. I stayed on topic. We got Kaylee out of here. So go away, man. Thank you, man.